Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show. You just saw the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com, Andrew Malcolm at AH Malcolm on Twitter X. And of course, in the VIP section over at RedState.com, he's doing some great work over there. We're going to get to a couple of his latest pieces here. But, you know, we got to talk a little bit, Andrew, first about the complete disaster that Donald Trump's tariffs were going to create. Do you remember 3 months ago or 4 months ago that it's Smoot Hawley all over again. We're going to enter a Great Depression. That's Donald Trump is going to torpedo all economic growth.
That's right. The market will tank. The economy will tank. No new jobs, and allies will fight us back.
Yeah, about that. So I'm over there looking at the Wall Street Journal, and the Dow Jones came down a little bit today, but you know, they are now higher than they've been all year long. The S&P 500 is higher than it's been all year long. The NASDAQ is actually quite a bit higher than it's been all year long. All these things, by the way, are records because this year they were higher than ever anyway. And now you've got the EU basically kind of caving to Ursula von der Leyen, caving to Trump on this thing. Even some of the people in the EU are a little unhappy about this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, being unpredictable works. And now I see he's shortened the deadline for Putin to get serious about peace in Ukraine.
Yeah, you know, I think it's in part because he can, right? I think it's in part because he has now basically isolated the UK and, Russia and China. Through these, you know, he's got Japan, he's got the EU, he's got the UK, which, by the way, got a better deal than the EU. The EU is not happy about that, but the UK actually got a better deal. They only got 10% tariffs. The EU is going to pay 15%. Japan's paying 15%. And that's because the UK saw the writing on the wall and made the deal quicker, or, you know, got the framework in place quicker. But I mean, he's isolating Russia and China through this so far, right? I mean, he's going to be talking with China this week, I think, and Sweden. I think that he's going to meet with Xi Jinping. So, you know, he might cut a deal with China at some point here too, but I think India is going to be next. And I think the reason is because it allows him to isolate Russia. He wants to punish Russia for not, you know, calling off the war. And if he cuts off India from Russia, there's Putin's going to be in a lot of financial trouble.
Yeah, India's buying a lot of Russian oil, despite the embargo. So yeah, it's I'm cautiously optimistic. I think that's the phrase. Putin has succeeded for 25 or more years now in bluffing everybody in. Ignoring sanctions and doing what he wants to do. So he's worried about Trump. You know, when Trump was president, Putin did none of his funny business. He stopped it. And then less than 2 months after Trump left office, Putin began preparing to invade Ukraine. So he knew Biden was weak. So, and now Trump has come around to help Ukraine via the European allies, which helps the U.S. economy because 90% of this military aid gets bought in the U.S. So that's jobs there. I think Trump is succeeding in his second term, ironically, because he lost his re-election. I think that was a silent shock for him. He'd never admit it, and I don't blame him, but he learned a lot from that. He learned a lot from his first term. He brought in people that he trusts this time. He's tougher this time. He's less distracted this time. Remember when earlier this year when one of the reporters said, well, what do you think, Mitch McConnell's not going to vote for this? And Trump said, we're not talking about Mitch McConnell today. Well, in the first term, he would have gone off on Mitch McConnell and that would have become the story. So Trump is much more focused and serious this time. I give a lot of credit to Susie Wiles, the first female chief of staff, who was so good with Trump in the campaign, keeping him focused, not resisting him, but keeping him focused. And it really, really pays off. And Trump has to see, we all have egos, but Trump has to see that this is working. I hope he doesn't get carried away too far because he's winning, winning, winning right now.
We all have egos. And I'll tell you one who has an ego, but is generally honest. And that's Bill Maher, right? Now, I'm not a fan of that kind of show format. I'm not. I think he's the best at it. And I think he's the most intellectually honest at it. And it's a format that basically lends itself to a lot of intellectual dishonesty. And Jon Stewart is one of the chief practitioners in the other direction, where it's clown nose on, clown nose off.
Yeah.
So Bill Maher yesterday, I guess, or over the weekend, this is before the news came down about the EU thing. He was talking to somebody on his podcast and he said, look, I was wrong about tariffs. You know, I mean, it's still, there's a lot left to play out, but I was predicting that there was going to be a crash and, you know, because all, you know, a bunch of these people were telling me there's going to be a crash. There's going to be a crash. And I thought there was going to be a crash. He said, turned out I was wrong and Trump was right. He says, no, it still could go sideways. He says, but it's been almost 4 months and we don't have a crash. We're not even, the stock markets are higher than they've ever been. Nobody's talking about a crash any longer. He says, so Trump was right. I was wrong. And that's fine. You know, I can admit that. He's the only one though of these critics who came out and predicted doom and gloom to even acknowledge that Trump is actually winning on these, in these things. And that, you know, I think that the EU deal kind of speaks for itself, that the EU realized that they didn't have any leverage. They need Trump to backstop Ukraine because that's very important to them. That's the reason why they're agreeing to do the 5% GDP commitment to common defense. And it's also the reason why they're agreeing to pay 15% tariffs to access our market. It's one of the reasons, I should say, when we're not paying tariffs the other direction. The deal is it's really unilateral. 15% tariffs if they want to bring stuff into the United States. And the reason why is because they have so many other regulatory hurdles for American products that it basically amounts to sort of a regulatory tariff. And they know it. They're aware of it. And those economies, the 29 economies that are tied up in the EU, really need to have access to the American market. And Trump understands that. He knows how to leverage it. And he's got sort of this recklessness, or, you know, seeming recklessness. I think maybe to some extent, a little bit of kayfabe, you know, recklessness. He's trying to look reckless in order to, you know, press for immediate resolutions of things. That's what he's doing with Russia too, I think, is, you know, this isn't using the American military. This is using American economic power. Which is softer than military power. And it's not as provocative as military power. Although Russia today, did you see Dmitry Medvedev claim that this was some sort of war thing? It's like, and he says, you know, we're not Israel, we're not Iran. And the response to that is, you know what? We're not Ukraine, buddy.
That's right.
If you really want to find that out, you're going to find it out in a hell of a hurry. I don't think you want to go there.
Trump is a pro negotiator. And, you know, one of the key tenets in his book and in his life is to be prepared to walk away from the deal, or at least look like you're prepared to walk away from the deal. Keep them guessing. Yeah. And he's doing that. I'm honestly not a fan of Bill Maher's. I agree with you about his intellectual honesty. I just think who cares? I mean, I don't know why we pay attention to any of those guys. I guess it's because
I know that Colbert getting canceled was a real blow for you, though, right? I mean, yeah. You're an avid watcher of Stephen Colbert, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, I thought Colbert was funny years ago when he was gonna, what was he gonna run for president or something? And some of that was entertaining. But as far as what he thinks about Donald Trump or anything, I don't care. It's showbiz. What Donald Trump does is often showbiz, except he's got the power to make it happen. And so I know blogs and websites need to have material, and Bill Maher is very, just like Trump is skilled at using the media, Bill Maher is skilled at getting publicity for his late night show or evening show, whenever it's on. But I just, I don't really care.
Well, I mean, again, not a big, huge Bill Maher fan. Also not a big, huge Bill Maher critic. I think that he's at least trying to take an honest approach to things. Now he's very antagonistic towards religion, which is one of the reasons why I'm not particularly much of a fan of his. And I think he's gone out of his way to be provocative in that direction. But when it comes to politics, I think he's trying to be honest, and it's just such a night and day difference between him and, say, Stephen Colbert.
Yes. Right? Oh no.
Anybody else in this?
And he gets some credibility for that. I guess if you care what a show business person thinks, that is interesting.
And so, I mean, we could talk a little bit about Colbert too. I mean, Colbert he's not even being fired. He's just not, his contract's not getting renewed. And at least so far, Paramount and CBS are saying that they're going to let him continue to the end of his contract in May, even though the show's losing $40 million a season, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But I think that they were worried about the backlash if they just took him off the air. But at some point,
there's 200 people employed there. They'd have to find, or potentially have to find, other jobs for them. But you know, I think if Colbert, if he wants to be a martyr, he could push it and say naughty things about CBS, and maybe they end up at the end or in the middle of the winter during a slow period after Christmas when ads aren't that strong anyway. They just say, you know what, just quit. We'll pay you the rest of your salary and your history. And then that'll be another big story for us to write about.
Well, yeah, I mean, I actually am kind of somewhat bemused, I think is a good way of putting this. I'm somewhat bemused that they're actually allowing him to stay on the air, because the first five shows after this thing got announced are the reasons why you don't allow, why broadcasters usually don't allow, you know, terminated hosts to have a goodbye show or a valedictory lap. You know, it's because they do crazy things when they know that they don't have to, they're not going to be held accountable for it anymore.
Yeah.
And, so, I mean, they did it with Jay Leno. They did it with Johnny, right? Johnny announced that he was going to retire a year ahead of the time when he went off the air, but that's because Johnny was Johnny. It was his genre, you know, and he was really the only practitioner of it that had managed to last, other than Arsenio Hall. And even he didn't last Fox for all.
And he was trustworthy from a corporate point of view.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think CBS, is kind of AT&T, who owned CNN before?
AOL Time Warner, and then I think it became just Warner.
I'm sorry.
Andrew is getting a phone call from Stephen Colbert.
That's right. I think they're like CNN, or like the previous owner of CNN did, I think CBS is kind of clearing the decks for the new owners.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so the new owners don't have to be the ones to take the onus of, we don't like you, go away. So they can come in as the good guy. And that makes a lot of sense. It happens everywhere where these things occur. But you know, it's not a loss. I mean, at its height, on really hot nights, 2 million people watch. That's not even 1% of the country. So who cares? You know, well, I just can't get. I mean, it's an interesting corporate, an interesting media story, but like you say,
well, it is interesting. Yeah, it's interesting that you say who cares, because look, they scheduled a massive protest for yesterday. Did you see this? That they scheduled a massive protest for this yesterday.
Isn't that great?
In Manhattan. See how many? Do you see the number of people that showed up for this massive protest to demand? Did you see the story?
No.
It was 20 in Manhattan on a Sunday.
You know,
20 people showed up, and then they left when they realized that that was all that was going to show up.
Back in the anti-Vietnam War protest days, I was assigned, well, because I was a slump, but they sent me over in rain to a Vietnam War protest on the steps of St. Patrick's Cathedral. And literally, there were more reporters than protesters. I think there was maybe 12 or 15 of us total standing in the rain like lost souls, and then for nothing, because it wasn't a story. I mean, yeah, those are not.
I mean, I think didn't they prove Paramount's point? Didn't they prove Paramount's point that Stephen Colbert had basically lost the audience, and so there wasn't really much point in continuing on? And again, I don't even know why they're still letting him do this show.
That's a good question. That would be, if I was a media reporter, that would be a good question. Let's lose money. As I can't think it's worth $40 million. And
well, I mean, the show costs $100 million over the course of a year. They've just been losing $40 million each year over the last couple of years. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Well, maybe I don't know when this deal is going to close. Probably soon. You know, maybe they'll just going out the door. They'll just kill the whole thing while that they got the storm over now, and then the new guys can come in and say, well, he can run a game show or something. I don't know.
Or they just pay him and just eat the cost, because it's cheaper to do that than it is to do it right now.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly. Remember, this is one thing about, I've always liked Jay Leno. I worked with him a little bit on some appearances, and he's a really decent guy.
Yes.
And genuinely funny. And he pointed out that he was doing 200 during his Tonight Show days. He was doing 200 stand-up nights plus a year, and getting more money from that than from NBC. So when they came to him and said, we're going to have to cut a lot of the staff here in his last year. And he said, oh, look, you know, just cut my salary in half, and I got enough money. Just cut the salary in half and use it to pay the staff. And they did that. And everybody kept their jobs for another year. And now, sadly, Jay Leno's wife has dementia, and he's spending most of his time taking care of her. So, I mean, he's a decent guy. I don't understand. I admire his passion for cars, but boy, I don't understand.
Well, he was interviewed over the weekend. I think it was over the weekend or late last week at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation by the CEO. And he was asked about what was going on with late night. And Jay Leno said, I don't understand why they made the choice to lose half their audience. He says, you can joke around about politics, but there's funny across the spectrum, right? I'm paraphrasing now. Basically, he was saying,
you're right.
You can make fun of lots of different things across the spectrum. And why exclude half the audience when you can mine funny material that will appeal to the entire audience? And he says, that's what I don't get about this.
I saw an old interview with Johnny Carson, and he said basically the same thing. Mike Wallace asked him, why don't you take on the hot topics? And he says, it's entertainment. Why do you want to? We're here, you know, people going to bed. They don't want to talk about angry things. And it's wonderful. It's a lost art. And maybe society has moved beyond being able to joke on both ways.
Actually, I think society is ready for it. It's just that nobody's offering it. I mean, Gutfeld, yeah. Maybe.
Well, if you look at on Instagram, Nate Bargatze, have you ever seen him?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that guy, there's never anything dirty, and it's almost always about him, and it's almost always self-deprecating. Even if he has something with a little bit of an edge, he softens it by, for instance, he said, I grew up with the most Christian of Christian parents in the 1980s. He said, they did a good job, and I, you know, it turned out okay, and it's all fine. But then he tells a funny story about not being able to lie, and it's all on him. This is funny, I think. He was at a sleepover, and the kids say they were going to watch, I forget, some horror movie at midnight. And he stood up in front of them and said, I don't think I'm allowed to watch this. and the host mother said, well, look, we just won't tell anybody that you did. And he said, well, that's going to be hard to do because I already called my parents and they're on the way to get me. So, but you know, it's clean. It's always funny, and it's mostly on him and on his wife. And it's very, he's very successful. So I don't know why they, I mean, I suppose it would be too confining because he'd have to talk to other people. He himself is the show.
Right.
And I don't get, you know, having Debbie Reynolds on or somebody.
Well, that actually would be a pretty good get since Debbie Reynolds is currently.
Yeah. She's long
currently
gone
someplace else.
With her daughter. Yeah.
With her daughter. Yeah. That'd be an interesting interview, though. I mean, so how are things there?
Well, was it Debbie Reynolds? I think it was Debbie Reynolds. Did some funny, outrageous thing on the show that was unplanned and pulled Johnny Carson into a big swimming pool, or she did something, or took him under the desk or something. It was something very television.
Yeah. I'll refrain from speculating on guests. However, I am willing to offer CBS and Paramount, now Skydance, which is buying Paramount. It's going to be called New Paramount, or they're going to keep the Paramount name, but Skydance is who's buying them up. I want to make them an offer, and I need your cooperation on this, Andrew. Is that
sure?
I know that Colbert is losing them $40 million a year. I am willing to do the show for the next, 10 months or so and only lose them $10 million. But they have to bring Andrew along as my partner in this. We'll only lose them $10 million. And that'd be a huge improvement.
That's a fair offer and no doubt a baffle box office success. Yeah.
Literally dozens of people will show up and protest outside.
Yeah, that's what he said when they announced that Colbert was being canceled. I said, gee, what will both viewers do?
All right, we got to get to your columns. I don't want to take more time on this. Barack Obama, the signs of his malice were there all along. I think it's one of your most popular. You were telling me this is one of your most popular VIP.
Yeah, it really.
Tell us a little bit about this.
I was surprised. Well, I went back. Obviously, you and I both wrote a lot about him back 2008 on through.
Oh, sure.
He's a real piece of work. And 8 days, I think it was 8 or 10 days before he was elected president, that's when he came out with what you and I have talked about is we're five 5 days away from the radical transformation of the United States. And, you know, that skipped over. He was an enthusiastic crowd in Columbia, Missouri, and people skipped over it. But that was a seminal moment. I mean, this is what he wanted to do. And if you go through, as I did in this column Sunday, if you go through and list numerous things that he did, they're damaging to the United States. They're negative to the United States. They're kind of outrageous. Remember during Benghazi, which to me is the worst outrage I've been involved with covering, four Americans got killed. Obama talked to Hillary Clinton at 5 o'clock that day when it was just starting and disappeared for 16 hours. Totally disappeared. Four Americans getting killed, a riot, the consulate in Benghazi getting burned down. There were no preparations by the Pentagon to back up. This is at the end of a day where there were riots all over the Middle East because it was the 10th anniversary of 9/11. They stormed the embassy in Cairo. And the Pentagon, the Obama's Pentagon, Leon Panetta, they had no preparations ready to go rescue or back up these poor Americans. This was the first ambassador killed in years. So they weren't prepared for that. Hillary Clinton did nothing. She had already cut the security of the consulate, taken away the Marine contingent. They did nothing but talk with these poor people. Obama appeared the next day with Hillary Clinton, who remained silent, and blamed an obscure anti-Muslim video on YouTube falsely, and then scooted out for a couple of fundraisers with Harry Reid in Las Vegas. And he vowed swift justice, and the families are still waiting for swift justice, or any justice. And the press never pressed Obama, like, where were you? Where is the commander-in-chief when this is happening? Leon Panetta's excuse was, well, you don't send troops in where you don't know what's going on. Yeah, well, tell that to D-Day troops. You send them in where you think you know. They had a drone there. They knew what was going on. They could have...
They had a real-time satellite, they had a drone in the air, and they knew that the embassy was under attack. That is United States sovereign territory. United States sovereign territory was under attack, and we failed to respond. That's flat out what happened.
And if we back up, months before that, Obama, on his way out the door, taking his mother-in-law on a tour of South America, announced that they were going to join European countries in ousting Muammar Gaddafi.
Right.
Yeah. And this is the winner of the Nobel Peace Prize. Was going to join a military operation to oust Muammar Gaddafi, who was not a nice man. Of course, neither was Obama. But 10 years before that, 2001, the powers, including the United States, promised Gaddafi that, okay, we'll leave you alone if you surrender your nuclear weapons program. And so he did. And actually, Ukraine did back in the early 90s, too. And what's the result? Gaddafi gets killed by a mob hiding in a culvert in his hometown in Libya. Ukraine gets invaded by Russia, goes back on their word. And if I was North Korea and Iran, I would remember these deceits by the Western powers, that if you give up your nuclear weapons program, they'll do something bad. you know, this is off the subject, but Gaddafi's nuclear weapons program is the same program as Iran's. And the Israelis and U.S. military reverse engineered it. And that's how they got into the Iranian nuclear weapons program. Computer system. with the Stuxnet virus, where they could listen and see what they're doing and screw it up. And they sent the centrifuges into chaos and had silenced the alarms. So the engineers were looking, everything looked fine, but the whole program was melting down. So that was a good thing that came out of it. But Libya, as a result of Obama and the Western powers taking or ousting Gaddafi, Libya turned into a lawless state, which now has factions fighting, other European powers picking sides. And it's a rampant terrorist training ground, sending them terrorists into West Africa. And we just had
a huge refugee crisis too. That's right. Europe has been absorbing refugees from there ever since. Yeah.
So, I mean, so Nobel Peace Prize. Yeah. Obama got it in his first year. He hadn't done anything except his apology tour going around the world, which I got into in the column yesterday. He grew up, spent his childhood years in Jakarta. His mother was with a Muslim man, and Indonesia is the world's most populous Muslim nation. And Obama spoke on national television as part of his apology tour. And he told, trying to show how diverse, I guess, he is, he said that the United States national motto is E Pluribus Unum, which is out of many, one. And of course, Indonesia is a multicultural country. Unfortunately for Obama, if that's not the U.S. official motto, the motto is In God We Trust. And if he had said the actual motto, honestly, then he would have been citing an infidel deity to this Muslim nation. So that's why he didn't do it. And that's the kind of thinking that he has, and which led him to try to undermine the Trump administration. And we'll see. I don't know. I guess there'll be a legal argument whether trying to undermine another administration is an official act which earns a president immunity. But anyway, it's an evil thing to do and an outrage. And I doubt it, but I hope he has some accountability someday.
Well, I hope so too. Be sure to read Andrew's excellent column at this at Red State. It's a VIP column. We don't have time to get into it, but he's got a second one in there as well from, I think, on Thursday. Oh, no, that was a week ago. I'm sorry. Donald Trump has paralyzed lost Democrats, and they're even more paralyzed after the trade stuff we just got done discussing. Yeah. But be sure to check out both of those columns. They're both great columns. We're just about out of time here. Do you have any jokes for us today?
I have one. So a conspiracy theorist, lifelong conspiracy theorist, dies and he goes to heaven. And God sits and God is kind of screening him to see if he wants to let him in. And he says, you can ask me one question and I'm God, so you know the answer will be honest. And the conspiracy theorist says, well, okay, who really killed John F. Kennedy? And God says, Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone, and there was no one else involved. And the conspiracy theorist said, wow, this thing goes a lot higher than I thought.
All right, I got one for you. And this one I didn't get from jokesoftheday.net. I actually saw it on YouTube, but it's a Ronald Reagan joke. Okay. And I'm just going to preface this by saying that Reagan probably told this a lot better than I'm about to tell it to you, right? So this guy's in court because he got in an accident on the road and he's suing for, you know, injuries and stuff like that. And the attorney for the defendants is grilling him on the stand. He says, listen, he says, didn't you tell the police officer there at the scene that you were fine and you'd never felt better? And the guy says, yeah, but the attorney cuts him off. He says, no, just yes or no. Is that what you told him? He says, well, yes. So then the guy's attorney gets up and says, would you like to explain that answer a little bit? He says, well, yeah. He says, you know, I was you know, I had my truck and my horse carriage and stuff like that, and had my dog in the truck, and this guy came out of nowhere and plowed into us. He says, you know, overturned everything. He says, so my horse is laying out there and my dog's laying out there when the deputy arrives. And he says, well, what happened at that point? He says, well, the deputy goes up to the horse and he can see that the horse has both of its legs broken. It's in a tremendous amount of pain. So the deputy pulls out his pistol and euthanizes the horse. He says, then what happened? He says, well, he goes over to my dog and my dog's back is broken and he's, you know, clearly in distress. So again, the deputy pulls out his pistol and euthanizes my dog. And he says, okay, so then what happened? He says, well, the deputy comes over, puts his hand on his hip and says, so how are you feeling? And I said, I've never felt better in my life.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Credit to Ronald Reagan for that joke. And, you know, the Gipper had a lot of good ones. I'd never heard that one before. And I ran across it a few days ago. And I said, I have to remember this one for Andrew. This is one that I know Andrew's going to want to hear.
I'm glad you did that. Next week, I'll tell Ronald Reagan's joke about buying a car in the Soviet Union.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds good. I might have one about Leonid Brezhnev in the Soviet Union. So okay. We'll
double up. We'll twin up.
We'll double up. It'll be the back in the USSR edition of the Ed Morrissey Show next week. All right, Andrew Malcolm, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com at @AHMalcolm on Twitter or X if you prefer, and of course RedState.com. Go to the VIP section. It's got lots of great stuff in there. Andrew, thanks so much. We'll talk again next week.
Yes, we will, Edward. Thank you very much, everybody, and see you then.